Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast. We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. Today's show is going to be a hot one. We'll be talking with the Canby Fire District about their proposed bond measure that is on your ballots this election. It's the first time in the district's 110-year history that it's ever proposed a bond measure, and if it passes, they think it's the last one they'll ever need. Hey, speaking of that history, Canby Then is back, and we'll be talking about what else but the most interesting and colorful local stories involving fires and the fire district. You may know that one of the tenets of the Boy Scout oath is to be truthful, but we're about to tell you about a time a Canby Boy Scout was caught with his pants literally on fire. But first, the news. An Aurora man was arrested Tuesday after fleeing the scene of a crash involving a semi-truck and a school bus full of children. Marion County deputies were called that morning to the intersection of Butteville Road and Elan, just north of the city of Donald. They found a North Marion school bus and a 2018 Peterbilt box truck with damage in the roadway. A third vehicle, a black SUV, had fled the scene. According to police, a Peterbilt truck, driven by 49-year-old Timothy Brown of Sheridan, was traveling west on Elan Road when the black SUV, driving eastbound, made a left-hand turn in front of him. Brown hit the SUV at approximately 55 miles per hour, causing it to spin and impact the left front portion of the school bus, which was sitting on Butteville Road at the stop sign waiting to turn. The school bus was operated by a Canby woman, Robin Martin. There were 20 children on the bus at the time of the crash. Martin and four children had complaints of pain. Fortunately, no other injuries were reported and no one needed to be transported to a hospital. Another school bus arrived on scene and took the children to school. Relying on witness accounts, deputies were able to locate the driver of the black SUV, Victor Arnaldo Guevara, 40, of Aurora, at his residence. He was taken into custody without incident. Guevara was booked into the Marion County Jail and charged with failure to perform the duties of a driver when property is damaged and failure to perform duties of a driver to injured persons. An update on an ongoing criminal case. Nick Stacy, the Clackamas County man and former Elvis impersonator charged with multiple federal counts of possession and transportation of child pornography, has requested that his arraignment be postponed until December. He had been scheduled to be arraigned in federal court on October 10th. The matter will instead be continued until December 4th at 1:30 p.m. Federal Magistrate Judge Stacy Beckerman ordered that the defendant will remain in custody until that date. Nick Stacy was arrested in September with a phone in his possession that allegedly contained over 9,000 videos and 20,000 images depicting child pornography. Police also alleged that he impersonated a law enforcement officer on numerous occasions in an attempt to make contact with and sexually exploit minors. The Canby Police Department will participate in National Drug Takeback Day this Saturday. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., officers will be at the Canby Police Department to securely take back and dispose of your unneeded prescription medications to ensure they don't end up in the wrong hands. The event is safe, secure, and completely confidential. So we're about to bring you our interview with Todd Gary and Nikki Heitschmidt of the Canby Fire District. We had a really fun and informative talk about a really important issue. The bond measure put forth by the district's board of directors stands to make a huge impact on the district and their firefighters and EMTs now and in the future, as well as the level of service that they're able to provide. I do just want to apologize really quickly. On this interview, you'll hear some background chatter pretty much all throughout. That is the sound of my kids. They really enjoyed the part right before this interview where Todd and Nikki very kindly and graciously took us all through the station, showed us the trucks and ambulances and all the different equipment that firefighters use, but weirdly enough, they really were not all that interested in the part where Daddy sat down and discussed the tax impacts of a complicated general obligation bond proposal. I think they've just been spending too much time with Tyler. So sorry about that. Hope you still enjoy this, and I will never try and do an interview with my kids ever again. All right, so we're here at the Canby Fire District. We're sitting here with Division Chief Todd Gary and Captain Nikki Heitschmidt. How are you guys doing?
We are great.
Good, good.
Doing well.
Nikki, thank you. Really happy to have you guys on the program. Gary, we were wondering if you could start by just kind of talking a little bit about the fire district. Tell us some of the basic fast facts.
Yeah, so a little bit of fast facts. We are a fire district. We're not a fire department. A department is part of a city. Mm-hmm. So, and they would be a department of that city. And we're a fire district. We're ruled by our own board of directors. We cover about 54 square miles. So we're not just Camby. And also, that's about 30,000 residents. So we have a large area and a large number of people.
Yeah. Don't you think it'd be clear if you called it the Canby Barlow and 54 surrounding acres fire district instead of just Canby?
Perfect.
Fire
district? Yeah. 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 We could cover it all that way.
It'd be hard to fit on the logo, but I think that it'd be more clear.
It would wrap around my shirt, but that'd be all right.
Cool. So we are mainly here to talk about the upcoming fire bond issue that's going to be in the election. Your guys' first attempt at a general obligation bond.
Yes.
Can you give us some of the basics of how much and kind of an outline of what you would hope it'd be able to cover?
Okay, so it's about $4.9 million. Mm-hmm. It's going to be for 10 years is what we're looking at. And what's that mean to you? It's about 28 cents per thousand on your property tax. And our board of directors were unanimously voted to put it out to the general public.
Yeah.
To see what they think.
Yeah.
And see what they want.
Sure.
So one of our pieces with the bond and going out for a bond, and the first one that we've ever done, is if we were able to do the upgrade to the station, do something on the north side of town for a station or an EMS station, replace some equipment, we told our board that we would never have to go out for a bond again. Mm-hmm. This gives us the ability to put money into capital. Mm-hmm. We have a capital outlay schedule. Mm-hmm. We have scheduled out for the next 20 years on what it would look like for equipment and how much money we have to put away in order to do all those things. So this is a one-time shot.
Yeah.
This is a one-time thing that we're going to do.
Yeah, yeah. And what are a few of the sort of action items, some of the new toys or things that would come to life that would really, you know, like $4.9 million is just a number, but what would it really look like if this were approved for the Canby Fire District and the kind of service that it's able to provide?
So upgrade of medical response and firefighting equipment. That means life packs, which are cardiac monitors, the equipment that we use there, some of the firefighting equipment that we have that's old and outdated. Mm-hmm. Does it work? Yes, it works. Is there something that works better? Absolutely there is. And technology, we all know what technology does. It's changing all the time. So some of those things. Our station, I'm sitting here with our only career female firefighter. And
again, that was Nikki Heitschmidt.
Correct.
She loves to talk to. She loves to be on podcasts. She just loves to talk. Loves to talk to me.
I've noticed that
is not intimidating to me at all. So
She scares me. But other than that, she's
no. Nikki's awesome. Yeah.
So Nikki, let's talk about station upgrades a little bit.
Yeah. So currently, the station we're in on Pine Street was built back in 1996. And in the 22 years, we've seen staffing go from two 24-hour-a-day firefighters up to five career staff 24 hours a day, plus one to two students. So not only are we bulging at the seams for living space and working space since we're here for 24-hour shifts, but we're also looking at an aged roof. We're looking at concrete slab with hundreds of thousands of pounds of equipment that's cracking, so no different than your home.
Right.
At 20 years, your things are just needing major repairs.
Yeah.
Our maintenance, so we don't get to major repairs.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at some big financial costs to not only house the people and make some interior upgrades, to meet the needs of the staff, which the staff are here to meet the needs of the community.
Right.
And over the years, as that demand has increased, we've had to bring in more people.
Yeah.
And we're feeling that squeeze within the fire station alone.
And so there's obviously the growth aspect that you've talked about, but there's also a real change of thinking and change of philosophy that's occurred over the past 20 years as far as even housing firefighters. The dorms are sort of this
open, real-world style philosophy right now, which was fine 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
Where most firefighters were male.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's really changed, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
And even just for male firefighters, a little privacy can be really good, especially in very stressful situations that you guys deal with. So
yeah, sometimes
you'd like to change that dorm plan, expand it, but also make them private rooms, which is kind of the industry standard.
It's very much the industry standard now. And you drive by our station, and we've taken a lot of pride in taking care of.
Yeah.
You know, the public bought this for us, and we take pride in what we have, and it is a beautiful station.
Mm.
It's just, it's not big enough.
Yeah.
We need to expand. We need to do some of these and still take the same care that we've taken care of it. It looks nice. It looks really nice from the outside, and we take some pride in that.
For sure. So we've been talking to people, you know, mm-hmm. about this fire bond and about the fire district, and, you know, I mentioned before, you guys have a great reputation, obviously, from people we've talked to, a lot of support, a lot of people just, whatever, you know, we trust them. From my own experience of covering a few bonds, $5 million seems pretty small. You can really get the sense that your board was very, very deliberate, not just like, let's add in everything, you know. But it was very concerted and very thoughtful about just what you need, which is really cool. That all said, we do have a few questions. We'd like to, you know, from people that are maybe a little more skeptical or maybe are supportive but just have questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
And wanted to ask, so this is a question we had. You, not you specifically, you guys, but the district was before the city council earlier last month. And they did a presentation on the bond. And one of the big things, and you guys did a press release about it as well, is obviously Canby's growing as
yes.
well as the district. They kind of are a reflection of each other, obviously. And the idea is that Canby's going to continue to grow. So one thing that I would think people might wonder about is obviously more people, that's a need for more service, but that is more property taxes, right,
mm-hmm.
funding you guys. So how would you respond to that as far as why wouldn't that cover some of the need for, you know, the growth needs that you guys have within the district?
So within the Oregon tax laws,
mm-hmm.
we can only grow at 3% a year.
That's right.
So we're only able to increase our budget
population
by that 3%.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Population grows 10%, you're capped.
Yeah, we're very limited to what we can increase.
Yeah.
So that's,
and each household only brings in how much money? Hundreds of dollars. So how many homes do you have to bring in to bring in the $10,000, the $50,000, the $100,000 to carry something out? It's really a lot of growth, or the industry.
Yeah, a new fire engine, the current one that was bought by Urban Renewal Funding,
mm-hmm.
$575,000.
Yeah,
for a fire engine. I mean, it's incredible the cost. And that's just the cost of doing business. It truly is.
For sure. One thing that has been talked about in the bond as far as new equipment that you'd look at getting is, tell me the exact term, not a ladder truck.
It is a truck. It's a truck.
A ladder
yes.
truck.
Yes.
We talked about the mini minutiae of what's a truck and what's an engine.
Yes.
And we won't go into that.
Yeah.
But it's a truck that you guys are looking to get with a very large ladder, 100-foot
ladder. 100-foot
ladder. So I'm just going to ask you the question the way that they asked it. Why do we need a ladder truck with a 100-foot ladder when we only have one building that's four stories?
You know, I don't even worry about the four-story building downtown.
Yeah.
There's been lots of talk about the four-story building. But we look at the amount of three stories we have.
Yeah.
We have a lot of three stories. We have a lot of setback from those three stories. And we have a lot of large buildings. If you look out in the industrial park.
That's the one thing, the setback. It's not just a pure height issue.
Yes.
Sometimes you can't get right up to the building.
Right.
And you have to have a certain angle on it. Or if there's a safety issue, the fire's coming out of the building. So
Yep, so you need to be back. And they say 1.5 times the height is what they really say to be back from something.
Yeah.
We look at some of the industrial park buildings. They're 36 feet tall. So you do 1.5 times that to get back, and we can't reach with what we have. Has the squirt done a really great job for us? Absolutely. This last time, it gave us credit.
Good little squirt.
It gave us ISO credit for that, and it got your insurance rates down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that was all about, is We're the best fire department we can be.
That's something people
with the equipment
forget a
that
lot
we have
is the ISO rating and how that plays into all of this. We really want to have a good ISO rating.
Oh, absolutely. And we're at 2.
It's not just purely a question of the service they're able to run at fires. It's, you know, that overall rating system.
That is part of it, is that ISO rating. And we're at 2, which is tremendous. We're at 2 in town, and then in our area is 1,000 feet outside of a hydranted area. We're at 3.
Yeah.
That is incredible numbers
but
for us.
But there is some concern the next time we're rated, if we still have the same equipment.
That we probably won't. We won't enjoy those same numbers that we're enjoying now.
Mm-hmm.
So those are definitely concerns.
Yeah. So another aspect that a lot of people are talking about, and a lot of them excited, is the idea of having the Northside Station.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about the Northside Station because I think like a lot of aspects of this bond, it's sort of a serving a need now as well as kind of a future looking need, which I think is cool because I in the presentation to the city council, the chief kind of mentioned that the board doesn't want to keep coming back for money. You know, there were certain aspects built in to where this is where we're pretty sure we're going to need down the road, so let's add that in as well. So
yeah. So I have been both career and volunteer at this fire department since 1989.
Yeah.
And as long as I can remember, people are concerned about the railroad tracks coming through town. With the railroad tracks coming through the middle of town, could we be blocked by a train? And yes, we do get blocked by a train from time to time, not as often as you would think. And we also do have the ability to get across the tracks with the logging road.
Yeah.
We're able to get across. But to make our response times better, if we put something on that side, our response times to first aids will be better than they are now.
Sure.
So we're looking
you
at
just use bond funds to just build a wall and just stop trains from coming. Just build a wall on the tracks. I mean,
you know,
that seems simpler to me.
It is, but trains are part of Canby. I grew up here. It's awesome. I love the train.
Everyone loves the train.
I even love when you're walking downtown and you can't talk to somebody standing next to you because the train's coming through. But that's just me.
Yeah.
So we're looking at an EMS station to start.
Yeah.
We will put a medic over there.
Yeah.
We'll put a couple people in there to respond to first aids.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and that will be either a public-public partnership, so maybe some of the city's property someplace, one of their facilities, or it also could be a public-private partnership.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big businesses around that have some large warehouses, and could we remodel a section of their warehouse to house us and get a permanent lease of some sort in one of those? And then, you know, the town's growing, property's getting gobbled up. So there is some money in this bond to buy some property.
Yeah.
Just for the future, we need to secure a spot.
Stake out a niche.
Let's grab a spot someplace so someday when we need it, it's there and it's not all gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
to the end, shout out to Lisa Lear and the Facebook group Canby Now. The question, do you have your eye on a certain location at this point, or just waiting to see what the vote is first?
You know, we're waiting to see what the vote is.
You haven't even sort of scouted the area?
We've looked around. There's some possibility with the city shops.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always a possibility. We had a great partnership with the city of Canby.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's those thoughts with the shops.
Sure.
There's also the police department and over in that area on a temporary basis. So.
Yeah.
So we have looked. We've got the feelers out a little bit.
Yeah.
But has anything been decided? Absolutely not.
Pulled the trigger. Okay.
No.
Cool. Well, I apologize about the background noise. These are just some of the Canby firefighters that are just fighting with each other.
Yeah, it's Nikki's crew. And they're just like that sometimes. So
guys,
we just gotta
be quiet over there.
That's my children who are along with us for this. One last question for you. So can you sort of explain the difference between, because you have a levy, you know, some people have mentioned that, like, didn't we just approve something? Like, it wasn't a bond, it was a levy.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about what that is for the property tax rate, the levy, the bond, what you can and can't do with some of those funds?
Okay, so our permanent rate is approximately $1.54 per thousand.
Mm-hmm.
That permanent rate has been frozen.
Mm-hmm.
It's been frozen by some of the tax measures that went through.
Right.
So we can't increase that unless we became another fire district or something huge changed.
Okay.
So a levy then is to hire personnel. So we can't survive on that $54,000. Right. We needed more people.
It's a temporary operation.
It is. It's 5 years.
Yeah.
It's a 5-year levy. We have to go to the voters every 5 years and ask to renew that levy. So that we have a levy of 45 cents. It's 45 cents per thousand. Yeah. So that gets us to $1.99-ish.
Yeah.
Right in there.
Yeah.
And levies are for people.
Yeah.
Bonds are for things. That's the way I always look at it. Yeah. Is we can buy fire engines, we can buy property, we can rebuild our station with a bond. Mm-hmm. Bonds are for longer time.
Yeah.
We're going for a 10-year bond. You can go out to the 20-year bonds, right. but we find that 10 years is a nice place to be. We don't want the public to have to pay for this forever.
Right.
We want that 10 years. And that's another 28 cents per thousand is what we're proposing in a bond.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you guys so much for being on and giving us some good information to consider. Any final thoughts?
Or? No. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming out and giving us the opportunity to talk.
Hope you guys can get these firefighters under control. I mean, good luck with that.
Yeah. And everybody, please get out and vote.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... We want voters. We don't... Either way.
For sure.
We just want people to vote and to make that decision.
Can't be people like to vote. I think that's nothing to worry about, I think.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
A man once said, "I have no ambition in this world but one, and that is to be a firefighter." The position may, in the eyes of some, appear to be a lowly one, but we, who know the work which a firefighter has to do, believe that it is a noble calling. Our proudest moment is to save lives. Under the impulse of such thoughts, the nobility of the occupation thrills us and stimulates us to deeds of daring, even of supreme sacrifice. The Canby Fire District traces its history back nearly 110 years, to a cold winter's night in December 1909. Not many were present at that first meeting, a newspaper reporter noted, owing to the fact that few knew of the meeting. About a dozen volunteers signed up that first night, less than half of the 30 or so that organizers had been hoping for. But it was a start, and boy was it needed. Two major fires occurred in the area the following year, one at the home of Canby resident W.M. Cantwell and one at Berkey's Mill in Maxburg. Both structures burned to the ground. In 1912, a disastrous and deadly blaze broke out at the Canby City Hotel. The hotel was full that night, as a theatrical troupe was in town, and most of them had opted to stay at the Fine City Hotel. The fire started in the kitchen in the early morning hours of April 13th, and was discovered by a hotel employee, Henry Mosley, who was awakened by dense smoke pouring into his room. He investigated, which was a bad idea, and resulted in him receiving severe burns around his face and neck. Nevertheless, Mosley heroically sprinted through the halls, rousing the more than 20 other employees and guests and warning them of the danger. His brave actions no doubt saved a lot of lives that night. Another hero was a woman, probably a member of the visiting theater company, who had been asleep on the second floor. She escaped by climbing through a window and shimmying down a column on the front porch. She then roused one of the boarders on the first floor by pounding on his window. He had a narrow escape, as his room adjoined the room where the fire broke out. The 12-year-old daughter of Mrs. Bradburn, the owner and proprietor of the hotel, survived a more horrific ordeal than most. As she tried to make her way out of the burning building through clouds of thick, clogging smoke, she tripped and fell down the stairs. Behind her, others who were trying to escape, not knowing she had fallen and unable to see her, proceeded to trample her. She is now suffering from severe bruises, and also because of the smoke she inhaled, the Oregonian reported. But the saddest part of the story was the death of Erastus Rosencrantz, a 92-year-old man of failing health who was lodging on the second floor. He was seen throwing clothes out the window and then disappearing back into his room. It was thought that he intended to jump, but hesitated too long and was overcome by smoke. He was never seen again. Rosencrantz was an early pioneer, born in Michigan, who had moved to the area in 1849. He was a rancher and was known as a breeder of fine horses. He was survived by 8 children, 19 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. In March of 1936, scandal engulfed the fire department when longtime fire chief Fred Larson was called to chambers by city councilman Peter Hornig to answer complaints that he was, quote, in the habit of being intoxicated from time to time. Asked to speak for himself, Larson said he had never been drunk at any time when driving the hose truck or any other time in recent years, the Canby Herald reported. He said he would not promise not to take a drink of liquor if he felt so disposed. I know just how you feel, Fred. Good for you. In response, Councilman August Rothenberg, who was also the Canby chief of police, claimed he had positive proof that Larson was drunk the previous Sunday and not fit to drive the hose truck if an alarm had been raised. Ooh. Larson informed the council that they were welcome to accept his resignation at any time, even that night if they wished, but they declined, and he was put on probation. But he would last only another 3 weeks. That's when Councilman Hornig again raised questions about Larson, this time that he was not fit by virtue of not being a U.S. citizen. When City Attorney C.N. Waite expressed the opinion that one needn't be a citizen to hold an appointed office, Hornig produced an obscure section of the municipal code which said, well, exactly that. No person is eligible to hold office in the municipal corporation who, at the time of his election or appointment, is not entitled to the privileges of a voter. Conceding that the city charter is the foundation of all municipal government, Larson resigned. The Herald reported that Hornig's smear campaign was part of an ongoing political feud rooted in the previous city caucus, in which he had failed to receive the nomination to seek another term. He had gotten himself on the ballot anyway, but lost in the subsequent election. Ousting Larson had been one of his final acts on the council. Things worked out for him, though. He went on, I believe, to have a very successful political career in Washington, D.C. Larson was replaced by Harry Porter, who coincidentally was also an immigrant from Britain and a wizard, and had a very peculiar lightning-shaped scar on his forehead. For our final story in this episode, we jump to 1954. On October 11th of that year, three pumpers, a water tank truck, and a salvage car from the Canby Fire Department rushed to the scene of an urgent alarm from the Meek Poultry Farm on Knightsbridge Road. They arrived to find a boy, wet, muddy, and with no pants on. So what happened was this boy, 11-year-old Ronnie Meek, had returned from a Boy Scout patrol to find nobody home. He set about doing his chores, one of which was to burn the household garbage. He did so in the rubbish pile out back. Unbeknownst to Ronnie, someone had dumped some gasoline in the trash, which isn't a terribly smart thing to do in a household that burns its garbage. The gas leaked onto Ronnie's pants, and when the garbage went up in flames, so did they. Remembering his Boy Scout safety lessons, Ronnie promptly stopped, dropped, and rolled into a mud puddle that was conveniently nearby. He stripped off his pants and saw that he had suffered a slight burn on one leg, but was otherwise all right. Until that is, five fire trucks showed up right in front of him. His grandmother, seeing the black smoke from the gasoline fire, had feared the worst and sent in the alarm. When the firemen arrived, there was nothing for them to do, the Herald reported, and Ronnie quickly found himself another pair of trousers. We have many more colorful and thrilling stories to share with you from the history of the Canby Fire District, but it'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then. Upcoming events this weekend, we've got a lot going on in and around Canby. Later today at 6 p.m., head to the Canby Public Library for Family Night. Get in the spooky holiday spirit by painting pumpkins that will scare or delight trick-or-treaters next Wednesday, generously funded by the Friends of the Library. On Friday, also at the library, music by the fireplace from 11 to 2. Enjoy the acoustic stylings of local musician Michael O'Rear. On Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., check out the Canby Rodeo Court tryouts at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. The grueling tryouts will test local women age 18 to 24 on their knowledge, interview and public speaking skills, and of course, horsemanship. Horsewomanship? Applications are closed, but the tryouts are open to the public. Elsewhere at the fairgrounds, for a rocking good time, don't miss Clackamette Mineral and Gem's 54th Annual Gem and Rock Show. Clackamette is a nonprofit community that loves sharing and educating folks about geology, rock hounding, mineral collecting, and jewelry arts. They'll have some cool stuff on display and be hosting activities for kids. free admission and parking for the event. Look for it at the fairgrounds from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday. Also on Saturday at 11 a.m., back at the library for intercambio and story time in Spanish. Fine-tune your language skills with native English and Spanish speakers. Finally, at 5 p.m. Saturday, a free harvest fair at Butteville Community Church. Come join the fun as they host carnival games, face painting, crafts, and a raffle. Soup, pork sliders, and treats for $2.50 each. And that's our show. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. Our producer is Tyler Clausen. Special thanks to our guests today, Todd Gary, Nikki Heitschmidt, and the Canby Fire District. Hey, if you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Be sure to catch our next show Monday. With Halloween just around the corner, we'll be talking about candy. I'll ask a nutritional expert how much of my kids' candy I can steal and eat before it will literally kill me. And we'll be continuing our look at the Canby Fire District. We'll tell you about the time Canby firefighters were late responding to a call at the Clackamas County Fair because the ticket takers would not let them in until they paid admission. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow or on our website, CanBeNowPod.com. Thanks for listening.